Hello there, and welcome to North Shore Sports Night on this Monday evening. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. It's a very, very chilly, very windy night once again here on, well, dusk, I guess, right, as the sun is just setting over my shoulder here. About 50 degrees and 25, 30-mile-an-hour winds. Another cold day here in the northeast portion of Massachusetts, but the sun has been out all day, so that's a good thing. A couple of bad things happening right now that we'll get to before we talk about our lineup this evening. In terms of sports, I just read on, I think it was on Twitter, that Robert Williams III will not be playing tonight for the Celtics against Milwaukee. We'll talk more about that later on with Mike Grenier toward the second half of the program, probably around 7:40, 7:45-ish. So that's not good news. Also, there's a story breaking out of Salem. Dustin Luca is covering it on Twitter for the Salem News. Big fire in Salem right now that is ongoing. And let me just see if I can find Dustin's Twitter account here so that I can pass it along to you. I just had it a minute ago. But if you tweet Salem News, I'm sure you'll be able to find out. Or if you Google Salem News Twitter, I'm sure. There it is, Dustin Luca, at Dustin Luca SN. So it's Dustin Luca at Dustin Luca SN. And there's a huge fire happening right now in Salem. Dustin has a lot of tweets on it from a couple of hours ago. Salem, Swampscott, Wenham, Peabody, Rehab 5, all at this particular fire at 272931 Hancock Street in Salem. According to Dustin Luca, Ward 5 City Councilor Jeff Cohen is quoted as saying, "I hope everyone is safe. Looks like they got everyone out. Thank God to the Salem and Lynn police who were here within seconds. The wind is what really screwed everything up." So again, Dustin Luca covering this for the Salem News, and he has multiple accounts on Twitter with lots and lots of pictures. Also, Channel 5 has been covering this, and I'll refer you to Channel 5 here in just a second as I try to manipulate my apps here. The headline from Channel 5 is saying that Salem, Massachusetts fire spreads to half a dozen homes and buildings. Firefighters in Salem were battling a multiple alarm blaze that had spread to multiple buildings. This was as of 6:48 p.m. according to WCVB Channel 5. And again, continuing from the Salem, the Channel 5 app, the three-alarm fire started just before 4 p.m. along Hancock Street between Canal and Lafayette Streets, just south of, and then it goes blank. Video from Sky 5 showed flames extending from one triple-decker home to other structures nearby. As many as six homes were engulfed in flames just before 7 p.m. Monday. One person told WCVB he was taking a nap while doing laundry, then woke up coughing. He's quoted as saying, "I looked out the back door and I saw smoke. I grabbed my dog and we went. Scooby-Doo made it." First responders were going door-to-door to evacuate residents from the neighborhood. Black smoke was billowing from one of the triple-decker homes, and smoke and flames had extended to multiple nearby buildings. Salem Fire Lieutenant Peter Shelblane told the Salem News that the buildings are so densely packed. This is a neighborhood that goes back a long time, so even the buildings on the street behind are also very close. Strong, gusty winds were causing additional issues for firefighters working to knock down the fire. The Salvation Army was at the scene, assisting residents who had been displaced. And again, for even more current updates, I invite you to check out Dustin Luca at Dustin Luca SN at Twitter, a Twitter account for Dustin Luca covering it for the Salem News as we speak. He's got many, many tweets about the fire and many, many pictures. So, tough day in Salem, and hopefully everyone is safe and Salvation Army is on hand. So, I'm just scrolling down the tweets here. Dustin talked to a resident named Rebecca Prescott who heard an explosion that triggered the fire. She's quoted as saying, "I was in the living room and I heard a big explosion. We looked out the window. We saw flames coming from 29 Hancock. It was just there. Then we could see it in the backyard. Then it caught fire to the house over here," pointing to 27. I don't know how much damage was done to this house at 31, which was just being restored. She says it was just petrifying. She remembers seeing everyone run out after the explosion. I couldn't believe how fast they came out of the house. They came out holding their dogs. Swampscott Fire Chief is on hand. Go to Dustin Luca at Dustin Luca SN on Twitter. There are many, many, many more tweets from Dustin covering this fire that is still being taken care of in Salem, breaking out at 4 o'clock. So good luck to everyone in that. Just terrible, terrible stuff going on here. And again, in sports, we'll be covering some stuff tonight, we hope. And I'm not sure it's going to happen at this point. We were going to... We still are going to try to get hold of Mike Giardi. He is the Marblehead High School baseball coach, but that game could still be ongoing. I don't have a score on that one yet. The Magicians are playing at Masconomet, and I think that was, let's see here, a 4 o'clock start. So we do have some scores. We'll check those out. Tim is not available at the moment. He should be checking in just a little while. At 7:30, we'll talk with Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer, about many things going on, including Keegan Bradley's near miss yesterday in the PGA and other stuff as well. And then at 7:45, we'll pick it up with the Celtics and Mike Grenier. Boy, I don't know. Oh, Robert Williams, man, I get nervous when I hear he's out, especially against the big guy with Giannis in there. All right, scores that we do have. In baseball, Austin Prep shut out St. Mary's this afternoon, 5-0. Central Catholic over Haverhill, 13-2. Bishop Fenwick over Arlington Catholic, 6-2. It was St. John's Prep winning by a score of 4-2 over Xaverian. And the other only other score we have so far in baseball, Winthrop 12 and Salem Academy 2. Just one score from softball, and that's Arlington Catholic 11, Bishop Fenwick 5. And one score in boys lacrosse in so far. Swampscott 8, Masconomet 7. That was an overtime win for the Big Blue. Girls lacrosse, it was Arlington Catholic 18 and Bishop Fenwick 14. Masconomet big over Swampscott 19-4. Those are the only scores that we have so far. And I'll check the scoreboard as I can when Tim gets on board here. It takes me a little time to scroll through this stuff. Also get my tang all tangled up. Let's see if I get any of the scores. No, not yet. So we'll check on that in just a little while. All right. What else do we have to go over here? Power rankings. Let me just see if they have been updated. They have been updated as of May 6, which I'm pretty sure was Friday, for spring sports in the area. And we'll take a look at those in just a second here. I have to go through my email too and make sure Mike Giardi is not trying to get hold of us, nor is Tim. All right, so anyway, let's check the power rankings in Division I baseball. Couple of things to note. First of all, CM is up there at the top with a record of 10-1, but very much in the high rankings of Division I. Well, now I lost it. Beverly High School is number 23 with a record of 6-4. And I thought I saw... I don't see it now. Okay, well, anyway. Though, and Lynn Classical is way down. Classical has a great record here of 9-3. But they're only rated at number 53 in the power rankings, according to the MIAA. St. John's Prep, by the way, is a record of 6-5, and they are number 20 in Division I. As I said, Beverly is ranked 23 with a record of 6-2. So not too shabby there. All right, let's take a quick run at Division II. Let's see. St. Mary's is number 5. They're 8-4. Oh, what's the next school I can find here? Danvers is 33, and they have 6 wins, 5 losses. Marblehead at 45 with 5 wins and 7 losses, and they're playing Masconomet this afternoon. That's Division II power rankings in baseball. Division III. Austin Prep is at the top, 11-0. Go down to number 14, you find Bishop Fenwick, 5 wins, 8 losses. Ooh, Gloucester, number 22, 7 wins, 5 losses. And this is in Division 3, I believe. And that's all I can see there. So that's baseball power rankings, 1 through 3, Divisions 1 through 3. We go to Division 4 very quickly. Hamilton Wenham is the highest-ranked local team at number 8 with 6 wins and 4 losses. Boy, I don't see any other schools on here. Ipswich is at number 28 with 2 wins and 7 losses. How about we switch over to softball? Let's take a look at the power rankings in softball. And I just I just lost them all, so let me grab it back here. This is what happens when Kearns isn't in studio with me. Let's see. Here it is. Power rankings. Click on that. And we go to Division I softball. Bishop Feehan is ranked number 1 in softball, Division I, 9 wins, 1 loss. But right up there at number 9 is the Peabody Tanners, and they have 9 wins and 1 loss. They're number 9 in all of Division I. And at number 19, Beverly High School, 7 wins, 2 losses in softball. They are also up there in Division I. Lynn Classical also looking pretty good. They're at number 31 with a record of 7-3. And again, this is as of last Friday, the MIAA power rankings. Division I softball. Division II softball. Billerica is at the top, 9-1. Tewksbury is 10-1. They're number 2. Boy, I don't see any of the locals. Marblehead is at number 39, 4-7. And that's it, man, in Division II, Cowabunga softball. We'll do one more look. Look at Division III. St. Mary's at the top, 9 wins, 3 losses. They are ranked number 1. Gloucester High School, number 11, with 6 wins and 4 losses. And this is Division III softball. Newburyport, number 22. And they have 5 wins and 6 losses. So kind of strange records for power rankings, but local schools doing okay in terms of the power rankings. And what else do we want to take a look at? Quick look at boys lacrosse Division I. St. John's Prep, 10 wins, 1 losses. They are at the top in Division I. Peabody boys lacrosse. I just saw them and I lost them. Just under Beverly. Beverly's at number 36 with 6-6 for a record. Peabody 37, 4-5 for a record. That's boys lacrosse Division I. Division II, Reading, number 6 with a record of 7-3. Danvers is number 23. And Danvers boys lacrosse has won 6 and lost 3. Anyway, we'll post these stuff on our website and you can take a look at them. I don't want to go through all of them here. Just waiting for Kearns to show up. What else do we have? How about girls lacrosse? Oh, should we look at Division II and boys lacrosse? Yeah, let's do that. Division II boys lacrosse, Marblehead, highest ranked local team at number 12 with 9 wins and 2 losses. And girls, where'd they go? There, yeah. Girls Division I, lacrosse, looks like Peabody 7-2 is ranked 23rd. That's our highest local school. And Division II girls lacrosse, Masconomet, 9 wins, 2 losses, and they are at number 9. Number 9, remember Sesame Street? Marblehead, unusual for them with a record of 5-9. They're down at number 31 in girls lacrosse. Very unusual for Annie Madden's teams. And that's what we have so far with all this stuff here. We'll check. I'm going to go through the scoreboard again. I'm going to take a look at it when we take a break and see if Tim is around. And then, again, coming up, we'll be talking with Gary Larrabee in just a while. Gary will be talking about Keegan Bradley missing. He was in front at the Wells Fargo. He was leading after 3 rounds. I think he was up by 2, and he ended up finishing missing. He lost by 2 as Max Homa won the event. So Gary will be talking about that. He'll be talking about some local competition as well coming up around 7:30. And then Mike and I and Tim will be talking about the Celtics, and I am very nervous tonight with Robert Williams not being able to play. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. You're listening to MSO News Sports. This is North Shore Sports Night. You can get a hold of us at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com, or you can actually leave a voicemail, 978-325-3638. 978-325-3638. And when I first got that number, it was called a local number, but sort of everything is local now. All right, we'll be back.
Carbon monoxide is a colorless, odorless gas that can be fatal. Don't use anything indoors that burns fuel, such as gasoline-powered generators, camp stoves and lanterns, or charcoal grills. Opening doors and windows or using fans isn't enough. Have your vents and chimneys checked to make sure water heater and gas furnace exhausts aren't blocked. If you feel sick, dizzy, or weak while using a generator, get to fresh air right away. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Editor of the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
All right. I have Mr. Enthusiasm on the line now. Tim Kearns is back with us. How you doing, Coach?
I'm good. I survived the week in Myrtle Beach.
You survived. How was the weather?
Sunny, 70s every day. Windy, just like back here. But it wasn't 50 degrees.
Yeah, that's a biting wind, man. It's very chilly. Well, Coach, I don't know if you've had one eye on what's happening up here. First of all, we're going to talk later with Mike Grenier. We'll keep this on the back burner. But Robert Williams is not playing tonight for the Celtics. Of course, the Bruins won. The Red Sox, I need to ask you about them. How do you put that all? The thing is, Tim, if there are 10 positions, let's say there are 10 positions for the Red Sox, the 9 positional players plus the DH, I'm thinking they're getting production out of 3 of those spots. They're getting production out of shortstop, third base, partially out of DH, a little bit out of left field, and a little bit out of starting position. But how do you look at these guys? To me, it's pretty scary.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, before the season started, John Bloom was getting a lot of crap from some of the guys that he had brought in here, and the expectation was that they would produce right away, and unfortunately, that's not really happening, you know. And I guess they're the only team in baseball that has 3 guys hitting over 300 in their starting lineup, and they got one of the worst records in baseball. So kind of hard to figure them out. Their starting pitching has the best ERA in the American League. Only thing is, the starters only go 4 or 5 innings, and then it goes to the bullpen, and I think Matt Barnes is going to play himself right off of the team. He's going to, I can see somewhere in the near future him getting his outright release, because he just doesn't seem to have it anymore. You know, and Robles, who, they brought back, they thought he was going to give him something. He's given up leads. So, the last game I watched was the other night. It was, they were just heading into extra innings, tied 1-1. I went away and came back, and all of a sudden it was 3-1. And I'm like, holy Moses. You know, in the blink of an eye, the bullpen has just given up leads.
Tim, I was talking to somebody today, and he said he saw a statistic that Louis Tiant one time threw over 230 pitches in a game. I think he said 259, but that might be a little overinflated. But he said Tiant threw over 200 pitches in a game, and I think Tiant won 20 games that year. What is the fascination of about throwing 75, 80 pitches and coming out of the game?
Well, I go back to La Russa. La Russa ruined the game. He set it up with, I think it was his team in, either Oakland or St. Louis, and he began to, he had situational pitchers. You know, the starters went so long, and then they came out and it went to the bullpen, and you had your middle reliever, your short reliever, your closer, and all of a sudden you were pitching the matchups, righty, lefty, and you were just, it was a turnstile of pitchers, and the game got longer because, you know, these guys got to come onto the field, they got to have their warm up pitches, even though they just spent the last 20 minutes warming up in the bullpen. And so it just made the game longer. And, you know, okay, can you see it? Well, yeah, okay, you want the matchups, the pitcher, the hitter. And how many times does that actually work out for you, you know? If you're a good pitcher, you can hit your spots, you can get the batter out, no matter what side of the plate he's on. Make your pitches. And the fascination has just expanded over the years. And I don't know if it was because of the plethora of Tommy John surgeries that these guys are throwing fewer pitchers. But you know, one of the things that you do when you do that, if you look back to the old days, and by that I mean 70s before. 70s is probably the last time that you had any large number of guys going out and throwing 200 innings. These guys didn't do the year-round training that these guys do now. And I think that's one of the reasons why these guys break down, is that they exercise too much. The muscles are too tight, and there's no downtime for these guys. And so they break down. And where before, these guys went home for the summer, and they had other jobs. And they worked other muscles. These guys, you know, it's the age of specialization, and we just see them breaking down more and more because they don't give their bodies a chance to rest and then build back up again.
Well, the thing is, you know, oh my goodness, I'm looking at some of these scores in high school lacrosse. You know, it doesn't take Einstein to figure out stuff. I mean, you just said the Red Sox have one of the best starting their starters have one of the best ERAs collectively in baseball. I would probably guess that their relievers have the worst in baseball. So why the hell don't they let the starters stay in a little longer? Unless what you said is that they just break down, they don't have the strength for it.
Oh yeah, that's what drives you absolutely crazy, is that now all these guys are trained in essence to only go so far, to throw so many pitches. And when was the last time you saw a guy throw a complete game, Rick?
Did Sale maybe 5 years ago? I don't know.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And last night, well, to give you an example, I was watching Red Sox Classics. It's 1994, I think it was. And Roger Clemens is throwing a beauty. And Tony Fawcett comes in to throw the ninth inning. Well, you know, in the olden days, You didn't see Tony Fossett unless Roger Clemens would get in trouble in the ninth inning.
Yeah.
Now the relievers start the inning.
Yep.
And that's a different mindset.
Yeah, I don't like it. To me, it doesn't make any sense. The guy who comes to mind, I think of Warren Spahn. Spahn was in his late 30s, early 40s, and he was throwing, 15, 20 complete games a year, at that age, and winning 20. I don't know. It just baffles me, but I guess you're right. It's the strength. It's the strengthening and conditioning. It's the specialties. I don't like it. It's not fun to watch.
No, it really isn't fun to watch. You get into the fourth inning, a guy does four, and is he going to be out for the fifth? If he makes it to the fifth, okay, is he going to be out for the sixth? And that doesn't matter because they're looking at the pitch count and they're going all the analytics, and something else that drives me crazy about most sports today is the analytics.
And the thing is, I forget who it was pitching a perfect game earlier in the year, seven innings. He got pulled. So it's like, that's not baseball, man. Jeez. It just ain't. Got a couple of scores in here, late scores. Mascanom at 15, Marblehead 5 in baseball. So they just finished, so it doesn't look like we're going to be able to talk with Coach Mike Giardi of Marblehead. In boys lacrosse, Magicians fared much better there as they swamped Gloucester by a score of 14-2. And in girls lacrosse, the most recent score in Wakefield 11 and Linfield 7. So those are the scores as we have them. Again, very quickly in baseball, the prep, Austin Prep 5, St. Mary's 0, Central Catholic over Haverhill 13-2, Fenwick downs Arlington 6-2, St. John's Prep over Xaverian 4-2, Winthrop, over Salem Academy 12-2, and as we said, Masco 15, Marblehead 5. In softball, Arlington Catholic 11, Bishop Fenwick 5, In boys lacrosse, Swampscott beat Masco 8-7 in overtime. Essex Tech over Shawsheen. I don't have that score, but Essex Tech won. And Marblehead over Gloucester 14-2. Girls lacrosse, Arlington Catholic 18, Fenwick 14, Masco 19, Swampscott 4, Wakefield 11, Linfield 7. All right, Tim, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with Gary Larrabee. Lots to talk about in golf. Disappointing ending for New England's Keegan Bradley yesterday, who looked so strong in an event over the weekend. But Gary, Tim, and I will be back to talk about that in just a few minutes. You're listening to MSO News Sports on MSONewsSports.com, and this is North Shore Sports Night.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Be back. I hit this button. We're back. And so let's see if follows right with the world. All right. Once again, Gary Larrabee is with us, sports historian, golf writer, and again, all around good guy. Great for him to join us every Monday evening. Gary, how are you?
Doing wonderful, Tim. How about you, Rick and Tim?
I'm doing fine. Kearns? Is he not here? Tim?
I answered. I said, I am well.
Oh, we didn't hear it. Okay, great. Thank you very much. I was afraid I messed it up once again, as usual. Well, Gary, we talked via email over the weekend, and Keegan Bradley was in really good position on Saturday evening, and then he kind of didn't make it.
He did. Keegan won the state individual championship as a high schooler at Hopkinton High School at United Shoe Country Club, now known as Beverly Golf and Tennis. In Beverly, so we always have a little bit of a North Shore rooting interest in Keegan, who did win the PGA Championship, guys, back in 2011. He's won four tour events, but nothing for the last 3 years. But as you were mentioning, Ricky, he was one shot ahead after three rounds of the Wells Fargo over the weekend down in North Carolina, and he couldn't quite put it together on Sunday. He loses by two shots to Max Homa, that's H-O-M-A, not Homer the Odyssey from Greek times, Tim. I'm not thrilled with Max winning. He's got a beautiful swing, great game. He has a beard I don't like, and he wears white belts. But looking back, guys, 5 years ago, Max Homer, as a rookie, played in 17 PGA Tour events, made two cuts, made $18,000, and here we are 5 years later. He's now won four tour events, many millions of dollars, and he's one of the players to watch between now, of course, and in 2 weeks when we have the PGA Championship in Southern Hills down in Tulsa.
Well, again, you know, I saw his name and I went, who? And then I saw he'd won four times and I'm like, going like, who? So he's, to me, he's another one of those, you know, no-name guys that's winning, but he's not winning the big ones, but he's making himself some money to keep himself in the tour. And you hope to see more of him, see some consistency. I guess it's the consistency, Gary, that a lot of these young guys, they win, but then they kind of drift away a bit.
No, Max Homer is not drifting away at all, and he will be one of the players to watch in Tulsa week after next. One more tour event before we get to the second major of the year. We should also talk briefly about Steve Flesch, who won the Champions Tour event down in Duluth, Georgia, shooting a 7-under par 65 in the final round. And these are the guys he beat by one shot. And these guys aren't sharp-lived. We're talking Padraig Harrington, David Toms, and Ernie Els, all major champion winners. And a couple of shots back was another big name whose name escapes me, but relatively unknown Steve Flesch. He's won now two Champions Tour events. He won the same event four years ago. So a little bit of a surprise on the Champions Tour this week as well, but look at the guys he beat, and he certainly earned it, Tim.
Did you mention Fred Couples? Sorry for interrupting. Because you got him on
Harrington,
the...
No, Harrington, you're right. Harrington, Couples, Fred Couples, and David Toms were one shot back. Ernie Els was two shots back. Mm-hmm. So thank you for correcting me, Rick, on that one. But, boy, Steve Flesch earned it. He's been doing some TV work off and on over the years, but he's back out in the Champions Tour and pretty impressive. Moving right along, let's talk about two local events.
Okay, go ahead.
I lost you, Tim. You still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I'm sorry. Okay.
A little closer there.
Okay.
I really
talk about.
We keep running into each other.
Go ahead.
As I emailed you today, I was reading the article on Kevin Johnson, Kenny Johnson, our brother Kevin, and again, boy, that's a tough road to hoe, isn't it?
It is, but you know, he was a great player locally. He won the Mass Junior, the Mass Open, the Mass Amateur. Tries to make it out on the tour after having a terrific college career at Clemson. Didn't really make it, and here he is. You know, not sure what the heck to do, and here he is now 52 or 53, and he had a whim about thinking about becoming a rules official, did some of that stuff locally in Florida, and he became good enough to make it on the Champions Tour staff. So it was fun to write about Kevin, whose parents came from Salem and Peabody, Ken Johnson from Peabody, Ian Clancy from Salem. So nice to see Kevin's found a wonderful new chapter in his life in golf. We should talk to guys locally about two significant events that have happened today. We had Mass Open qualifying at Kernwood. The low score was a 70 by Matthew Nomick of Great Horse, which is out in Hampton, out in Western Mass. And Jordan Burke from Needham shot 72. They're both amateurs. We had a few local guys who did make the cut for the main event coming up June 8th through 10th at Longmeadow out in Western Mass. And those people would be Tim Acquaviva, formerly from St. John's Prep, from Renaissance, and his clubmate, Stephen Quillinan. But locally, we also had Ethan Goulas from the Meadow in Peabody at 74, Tim Richmond from Old Salem Greens at 75, and George Delores from Tedesco at 77. So they'll all move on to the Long Meadow.
What other tournaments, Gary, are coming up for local golfers? And I don't know if I asked it last week. Where can you get that list? And like if you're a local fan and you want to go and see some of these local guys play,
I think you go to massopen.org. That's where all the Mass Golf Association stuff is posted. Go to anypga.com and learn about what's going on with the New England PGA. And that's the other thing we should talk about, guys. Former Salem golf director and director of instruction, Kirk Annefeld, who turned 66 in 2 weeks. He teamed up with Greg Farland to be the co-medal team at the New England PGA Pro Match Play that got underway today in windy LaGrange Hill down in Lakeville. And Tim, we all know what used to take place in Lakeville, right? Ted Williams' baseball camp way back when.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, they were co-medalists at 70 in the qualifying round in the morning and the afternoon. They blew out their opposing team 5-3, the easiest match of the four in the afternoon. They now move into the semifinals tomorrow morning. But the amazing thing here is Greg is, I think, 48, 49. Kirk is about to turn 66. They're the old-timers in the tournament. And here they are with a great chance to win the New England PGA Pro Am match play tomorrow down in the South Shore.
Now, Gary, what are the usual fees to get in and watch some of these tournaments?
No fees to watch. There are fees if you want to play, of course, because you're going to pay entry fees. But no charge. Just park in the parking lot and find out where the action is and watch some terrific golf, whether it's amateurs or pros, right here in our own backyard.
All right, what do you got cooking for your column this week in the Salem News?
It's going to run either the end of the week or next Monday. We're going to be writing about Peter Hazek, the longtime golf course superintendent at Tedesco, who is now in his 35th year, guys, as the ground superintendent, course superintendent, greenskeeper, whatever you want to call him, in charge of that gorgeous piece of property in Marblehead and Swampscott. But 35 years is extraordinary, and we want to give Peter a real tip for the hat next week.
Looking forward to that. Finally, Gary, before I let you go, what's the top thing that comes to mind in other sports observations for you? Because so much going on this time of year with the pros and the locals and all that other stuff. What jumps out at you right now from your observational outlook?
Well, I hope you guys are aware of the amazing story that Rich Strike made.
Oh, wow, yeah.
At the Kentucky Derby on Saturday. He wasn't even an entry until Friday. He wasn't even in the race until Friday. He's an 80-1 shot. He wins the race. They got to make a movie about that guy, that horse, I think.
My daughter's a horse person, and she said, he's crazy. That, 'cause he was chomping at everybody after the race. He was nipping the pony, and I guess he's full of vim and vigor.
Well, it's a great story behind the ownership as well as the jockey.
Yeah.
Who's from Venezuela. The owner has a beautiful horse farm in Kentucky. He had a fire a couple of years ago. He lost 23 horses. He almost gave up the business, but he was convinced to stay in it by his compatriots who provide him with both mental and financial support. And here we are 2 years later, an absolute Cinderella story like we've never seen in my lifetime.
No.
At the Kentucky Derby.
80-1, mm-mm. Tim, any final thoughts for Mr. Larrabee?
You know, when I heard the result, I actually wish I had decided to watch the Derby, but I was in Myrtle Beach and just enjoying nature's surroundings, so I didn't even put it on. So that'll teach
when
me
do we?
Yep.
Well, Tim, when do Rick and I receive our gifts for
yeah, really?
The foot down last week? You were holidaying in the beautiful southeast.
That must be in the mail, Gary, I'm guessing.
You know, and and I sent them next day. I can't believe they didn't get there yet.
All right. Hey, Gary, great talking with you. We'll do it again next Monday if all goes well.
Hugs and kisses, guys.
Thanks, Gary. Take care. All right, that's Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer. Yeah, Tim, I wasn't going to watch it, and then Martha and I were at, I think we were at the Hale Street Tavern, and they had it on there, and it started, and boy, it caught my eye, you know, up on the big screens, and holy rollies, what a finish by that guy. Strike Rich, or Rich Strike, I guess it is. He was two horses from the last at the beginning of the race. All the other horses except two were in front of him. And then he just took it away, and it was great story. My goodness, 80-1. Hello. I guess if you bet $1, you got 160 back on every dollar you bet. That ain't too shabby. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with Mike Grenier and talk some basketball here. Celtics in particular. Again, no Robert Williams tonight. We'll see what Mike has to say about that. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Alrighty now, we're joined by Mike Grenier, who is a sports journalist in his own right, after we talked with Gary Larrabee. And Mike, I was just telling Tim, I just heard about Robert Williams not being able to play tonight, and
right.
I had great feelings about the series, especially going into tonight's game, because I kind of looked at it this way. First game, Milwaukee absolutely controlled it. Second game, Celtics absolutely controlled it. Third game, that was up for grabs, and I think the Celtics blew it.
Yeah, you're right. I think where they blew it, though, was not towards the end with all the controversy about the officials, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
I think it came with a minute left and the Celtics up one point for the first time in quite a long time in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And they had possession, and Jason Tatum, who, you know, shot the 4-for-19, passed up an open three and passed it to Marcus Smart, who was not obviously a good three-point shooter. He missed the shot.
Mm-hmm.
That was their best opportunity to go up four with less than a minute left in the game, and it would have put enormous pressure on them. If they make that basket right there, even a two instead of a three, I think they win the game. Instead, Marcus Smart missed the shot. The Bucks scored the next 4 points, go up three, and the Celtics were behind the eight ball in the final 11 seconds. So that's where I think they actually lost the game, with a little bit around a minute left in the game, up one.
Tim, I want to ask you to talk about it with Mike about I listened to the so-called sports radio today, and of course they were all negative. They were negative on the Red Sox, which is deserved. They were negative on the Bruins. They were negative on the Celtics. But Tim, they dissected and put under a microscope every single play that the Celtics may or may not have done wrong. Tim, do you do that with a team, you know, so much, or do you kind of just say, look, guys, let's do this, let's concentrate on that, if you know what I'm trying to say? It was just so, every single play they picked, you know, was negative.
Rick, why continue to listen to these guys? They only upset you.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Now,
yep.
What these guys have to do, because they've never played on a team in their life,
right?
Okay? And they live vicariously through everyone else who plays.
Right.
And they make themselves look more knowledgeable if they can do this kind of a thing and throw in some words. But if you listen to it carefully, it's basically a lot of what they call yada, yada, yada. All right? And it's them bitching because they have nothing else to do. I mean, they couldn't even get picked on the team that Charles Barkley was the number one pick on. All right? And just be told to stand there. So don't even listen to what they say, because, you know, it's crap. Again, it's them trying to show that they know more than even the coaches do, and they don't. You know, it's like when people criticize Bill Belichick. Okay, well, how many drafts have you gone through? How many Super Bowls? How many games have you won? How many Super Bowls have you won?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and yet, you know, you're going to nitpick about the players? Stop it. It drives me crazy. And that's why I don't listen to them. It's just hogwash. The only guy you can listen to is Bill Belichick. The only guy you got to listen to is the Celtics head coach. And he's not going to spend the entire day talking about every single play. He's going to pick out a couple of critical plays where might have made a difference. Like Mike said, you know, smart takes the shot, doesn't make probably not the best person to take it. And then Milwaukee goes on to score the next 4 points.
And that was never pointed out today. Nobody ever mentioned that. Mike, I remember when that happened.
Not because they don't know that was the, that was the momentum-changing point of the game.
I remember when it happened.
Yeah, and Tim, I think you hit the nail on the head. Some of these folks literally have nothing else to do for the other 23 hours when they're not watching a game. So,
and Mike, they're not even watching the game.
Maybe not. Yeah, maybe not, because they have to switch their attention to the Red Sox and the Bruins and the Revolution and the Kentucky Derby as well. I love what Gary Larrabee said about, you know, you guys were referring to about the 80-1 shot winning the Derby, and I immediately chuckled and said, that seems to be what the Red Sox chances are making the playoffs.
You give them too much credit.
but getting back to the Celtics, Rick, certainly a winnable game Saturday. We have to point out how great Horford was in that game, because it's like he found he's definitely an intelligent player, but what we saw in that game three was him reverting to being a 26-year-old instead of a 35 or 36-year-old. He had a lot of energy. He played like 39 minutes. He had 16 rebounds to go with 22 points. He was battling all the way. I thought he had just a magnificent game. While Jason Tatum was having obviously one of the poorest games that he's ever had, certainly in the postseason. So he kept the game alive. He kept the game close in many ways. Derek White finally came through with some points. He had 14. He did some good things. Jaylen Brown had a big second half, and I finished with like 25. So they were hanging around, still a winnable game, despite the fact that Tatum was having such an off night. So that's why, obviously, tonight, Tatum, young Mr. Tatum, has to come to play, and he really needs a huge game with Robert Williams out, obviously.
And, you know, without the Time Lord, I get nervous, on the one hand. On the other hand, I'm looking back, and I'm trying to figure out, and I don't have the eye that you do, how effective has Robert Williams been in this series?
Well, he's not nearly as effective as he was in the regular season, because I think coming back and missing all that time from the knee surgery, he was rusty when he first came back, and then, you know, he doesn't have quite his timing. And then also, too, in that game Saturday, obviously he re-injured the knee, or there's some knee soreness, but he got walloped in the noggin by Bobby Portis' elbow and had to miss some time, some key minutes late in the game. And there were some observations made that he could have had a concussion now. I guess he cleared concussion protocol, but that certainly could have affected him. The fact he might have been seeing, you know, lights, because he took a pretty hard hit, and you know, when you look at it, it might have been a borderline flagrant. So who knows? But Robert Williams, certainly they miss his enormous presence out there. And I think what it does, Rick and Tim, right, it puts Horford, who is old and who's coming off a great game, has to play more minutes tonight, perhaps. And that's where Ime Udoka has to really be wise in how much he uses him, because he wants him down the stretch if the game is close. So it becomes a problem for the Celtics from the standpoint of Robert Williams would eat up some of those big minutes, and Horford wouldn't have to play, hopefully, 38 or 39 minutes again, just 2 days after having one of the best playoff games of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Mike, it sort of speaks to the job that Ndoka did managing Horford's minutes during the season.
No question.
And making sure that he was fresh for the later part of the season, where, you know, I wasn't paying a whole lot of attention during the beginning of the year, but when I watched, you know, Horford was there, and end of the season, you suddenly saw him, and he looked like a rejuvenated player. His intensity was up, his physicality was up, he was much more involved in the offense, active on defense, and really, he was where they needed him to be. Down low, like you said, grabbing rebounds, making second chances, and because of that, scoring more points, and like we saw in the young Al Horford years ago when he was first with Atlanta, I think it was, you know, and you were like, oh God, no, Horford is a beast. Well,
yeah,
he's kind of in older beast mode right now in these playoffs. He's really making his presence felt and making meaningful minutes for the Celtics.
And only that, he's playing, like I said, intelligently, Rick. I think we always appreciate the older players and how intelligent some of these guys are. Horford's a prime example. And I think Tim and Rick were seeing a Horford who, because his window of opportunity is not nearly as large as Tatum's or, you know, Jaylen Brown, because they're still in their early to mid-20s, Horford is seeing this as an opportunity with a very good Celtics team that this might be his last chance to get to the conference finals. It might be his last chance to get to an NBA finals. So he's playing with, I guess, a tremendous focus. That's the other thing I like about him. And that has to rub off on his teammates. And I think he's always a calming presence, too, on the floor, which is a great thing because, obviously, we see Tatum get distracted. And by the way, Rick and Tim, I think I'd like to get your take on this. The most disappointing aspect of Tatum's game in Game 3, all right, he shoots 4 for 19, and everybody jumps on that. But anybody can have a bad shooting night. It doesn't matter. Anybody. But he had one rebound in 41 minutes. To me, that was the most disappointing thing. One rebound in 41 minutes. He got out-rebounded by Pat Connaughton. I have to mention him because he's 8-1. Mm. And Connaughton played like 23, 24 minutes, and Tatum played 41. How does that happen? One rebound in 41 minutes? I think it happened because he gets caught up in the officiating. He gets distracted. And it just shows that he's not quite at the superstar level yet. He's a bit immature in his demeanor on the court. He gets caught up in the emotion of the game. It's okay to be emotional, but you also have to have some smarts and be savvy about it. And you have to, like, your mind has to go blank after a bad play, and you got to get back on defense.
I'm going to allow that if he bounces back the rest of tonight and through the series, because I think you're 100% correct. I think he's tried, I think he really has tried hard to grow up and discipline himself, but
right. It's
that prima donna prima donna mindset, and I can't stand it. And every now and then that just flares up. But I thought he was virtually invisible. I mean, I didn't notice all the referee stuff. He just wasn't part of the process, and it didn't look like he had a lot of energy to me.
Right, and of course he did take a bad fall on a dunk.
Yeah.
And he did look like he injured his offhand wrist, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So therefore, that might have affected him in certain ways. I don't think he was happy about it. He didn't complain about it at the time. He went to the foul line and all that. But he took quite a hit there. And speaking of getting distracted, actually, Grant Williams, who has had a great series, one time he was caught barking at the officials instead of going back on defense. And Udoka caught it right away.
Mm-hmm.
He called a timeout, took him out of the game for a few minutes.
Yeah, and Udoka called him out on that one.
Yeah, and that's a perfect thing to do because Grant Williams has showed a tremendous amount of guts trying to guard, Giannis, who's a good 5 or 6 inches bigger than him and outweighs him probably by 40, 50 pounds. And he's done a heck of a job so far for an undersized guy. But, you know, you cannot get Giannis, as I mentioned maybe a week ago, right, Tim? He's going to get the calls he's been getting for the last 3 or 4 years because he's an MVP candidate every year. He's a reigning champion. He's going to get the calls. So you just have to, like, say, okay, we're going to get back on defense. We're going to combat him some other way. We're going to try to make him uncomfortable. But if he gets the calls, there's absolutely nothing we can do about it. So that's the attitude they have to adopt. And then get back on offense and score and outscore the Bucks by 2 points. That's what you need to do because he will get the calls, and no amount of arguing with the officials is going to change those calls.
You know, as he comes charging through the lane and just, you know, bowling over people, I'm thinking, why not stand there, give him a target, and at the last moment when he launches himself, pivot out of his way so he doesn't have something to lean against. And
yep.
He falls down.
Yeah.
And then he's going to start thinking. And then he do it again. And then he starts thinking, holy Christ, I'm not going to be able to hit these guys. I'm going to have to change my direction. He's going to be flying all over the court looking for something to hit on the way to the basket. I just think, just step out of his way once or twice, and he'll get in his head.
Yeah.
Uh-oh, you know, I'm not going to be able to bounce off this guy.
Yeah, it was such a missed opportunity on Saturday because let's say Smart makes that three-pointer with like 58 seconds left and they win the game by a couple. Now you're at 2-1. You have the luxury of maybe winning tonight's game and going up 3-1, coming home to the Garden. So that's what hurts the most, the fact that they lost by a couple points. And how close was Horford to beating that shot clock, game-ending shot clock?
Oh, I thought he had it.
Yeah, like maybe like two-tenths of a second or something like that.
He knew he missed it as soon as he tipped it, he said.
Oh, yeah, he did, because he didn't react like triumphantly. He kind of knew that light had signaled the end of the game, and I saw Pritchard run out from the huddle or from the bench area thinking they had won the game, and then he kind of went right up to the official, and the official was kind of waving it off, and of course they reviewed it and all, but it was pretty certain that for sure he didn't make it. Obviously, Marcus Smart made a heck of a play there because the ball has to hit
the
ball, he just can't.
Yep.
And he threw it hard like a baseball pitcher, and you know it did graze the rim, and he was first on it. And he had a pretty good shot opportunity. He had a pretty good look at the basket there, but of course he rushed it. And then, you know, Robert Williams got a finger on it, and it went to the other side, and Horford got it. So it was a bang-bang play, and the ball went in a little too late. That's all.
Well, Mike, as we head toward the end here, your observations around the league now.
Well, you know, it's funny. You look at the I love that Memphis team, and Ja Morant, who's coming into his own this year, and they go into the game tonight. They're missing him in game four. And I thought he did a great thing for a young guy who can speak hockey, but he wrote a tweet saying, broke the code, because Steve Kerr and Steph Curry were complaining when Dylan Brooks of the Memphis Grizzlies knocked out a player from Golden State and knocked him out of the game, an injury, and Dylan Brooks got, not only did he get thrown out of the game for Memphis, but he got suspended for a game. Now, Steve Kerr went on a rampage after the game saying he broke the code, he tried to injure the player deliberately, and Steph Curry, he spoke all kinds of, and it was ironic because on that roster of the Golden State Warriors sits Draymond Green, one of the filthiest players in the history of the league. You can't even keep track of the technical fouls he's assessed with over the years. And so when Ja Morant got hurt on what looked like a dirty play by Golden State, he tweeted, broke the code, meaning the guy deliberately hurt him. So, you know, touche for him, because I think that he has a good point, because Draymond Green has already been ejected from one game in these playoffs, and he's been playing the style for many years and getting away with it. So, you know, but as far as the Celtics game tonight, I mean, you figure some of the role players from Milwaukee. I mentioned Pat Connaughton, who, by the way, is the leading shot maker on either team, percentage-wise.
Wow.
He's shooting 56% from the floor, and he's shooting 43% on threes, and he's averaging like 11 a game. And he's made a difference off the bench. So, you know, the Celtics have to start containing him, because when Giannis kicks out to the corner, he's been terrific on those threes.
You know, I think one of the guys that's going to be key is Tice tonight.
Yes.
He's going to have completely. The center of the board. Of Williams, he's going to have to be able to spell Horford for a few minutes, or play alongside of him and take some of the pressure off the rebounding, and he's got to get inside on the offensive board and steal a few points for him.
I agree, Tim. And the thing we've mentioned about him, he's certainly a better outside shooter than Robert Williams, who doesn't really take many outside shots, and he's actually capable of hitting a three. But he's more capable of hitting that 10 to 12 foot jumper on the baseline, maybe when Jaylen Brown is drawing a double team or Tatum. He's very good at that. So you're right. He has to play a far more important role tonight with Robert Williams out. And Rick, if we have a minute, we should mention Embiid for Philadelphia, because they look like they were going to lose in four games.
Yep, good point.
and it looked like he was even not even going to be ready for game three. You could tell he's hurting, but he wears a mask. He got through game three. They won the game. He plays even better last night, and now the series is tied. I give him a lot of credit. Early in his career, he took a lot of criticism for not playing. He missed entire seasons with injuries. But he is playing banged up right now, and he's carried Philadelphia on his back to tie that series against an outstanding Miami team, 2-2.
You know, I reluctantly root for Philadelphia for, you know, a couple of reasons, obviously, but they're impressive, and they've got a pretty good team.
Yeah, Tyrese Maxey is a young player who's come along, and Tobias Harris is a good player, and James Harden, who, of course, has been pretty much out of shape and really not playing the game that he was playing 3 or 4 years ago, had a huge game last night, hit like 6 or 7 threes, and they won over a very good Miami. So who knows? I still think Miami wins that series, but at least Philly extends it to at least 6 and possibly 7.
Mm-hmm. Tim, final thoughts.
We know from game 3 and 2 and 3 especially that the Celtics aren't afraid of Milwaukee.
Right.
They can, in most situations, match up with Milwaukee with the exception of Giannis, but they seem to have game planned well around him. You're going to give him he's going to get his points, but do it the way it's the old days. Let Michael score 63 and we'll beat you by 5 points.
That's right. You're right.
Yep.
Now, that's why I mentioned they have to, you know, Drew Holiday is a very crafty player. He's going to get his points as the starting point guard. But you have to actually prevent, they've done a great job on Grayson Allen. He's been a negligible factor. He's been a starter, and he's a good outside shooter. But Connaughton's been hurting them. Bobby Portis have been hurting them a bit. But other than that, you're right, Tim. I think that's a good approach to the game. Giannis, let him get his 46 or 50. And then just guard everybody else because he's going to be going to the foul line a lot anyway. So, you know, let him get his points and just put the covers on everybody else.
Mike, great observations tonight. Thank you so much. Always great listening to what you have to say because I learned so much. I appreciate it.
Well, yeah, you know, and let's hope if the Celtics win this game tonight, guys, I think you probably have to agree that they tip the scales back Boston's way because game 5 is in Boston. It would be a best of 3 series with 2 of the 3 games in Boston. So tonight is obviously, you know, a pivotal game, actually, a pivotal game.
Mm-hmm. Keeping my fingers crossed.
Yep.
All right, Mike, we'll talk to you next Monday if all things go according to plan.
Okay, that sounds great, guys. Tim, it's great talking to you as well.
And in fact, we may talk with you before that, Mike.
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Mike. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
All right, that's Mike Grenier, sports journalist, our Celtics expert here. And, Coach, any final thoughts about anything? You know what I've been watching for? I watched the Miami Grand Prix yesterday. I've been watching Formula One lately, and, man, that's something.
Yeah, hey, how come you never tell me you learned a lot from me? You tell Mike almost every week and everybody else how much you've learned. You don't say that to me.
Because I thought we were on the same wavelength and you could read my mind.
Oh, no.
No?
Much too cluttered.
That didn't work, huh? Coach, I always learn from you, and that's why I always ask you so many questions, because you have an insight, and you have, it's not an eidetic memory, but you can really, when we're doing games, I love the way you can describe the game as though you're watching it on instant replay. I love that.
Well, that's because my mind is actually seeing it for the first time.
Okay. All right, good, Tim. I'm glad you're home safe. I'm glad you had a great week off.
And we'll talk to you during the week.
Okay, Coach. Thanks so much.
All right, buddy.
Take care, Tim. Good night. Bye. All right, that's Tim Kearns, our sports ambassador of goodwill here at WESX. Man, that's a flashback. I think it's time to say good night. This is MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore. For Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, for Bill Newell, who hosts the Salem News Sports Writers podcast weekly here on MSO News Sports. Be sure to check that out every chance you get. Talk about learning something. These guys will tell you something all the time. All right, that's it. You want to get a hold of us, msonewsports@gmail.com, or call 978-325-3638 and leave a message. On behalf of the entire MSO News Sports team, I'm Rick Moore. Stay well.